the ancient Greeks could not understand how a day of rest could be part of creation. Yet it is so, for without rest for the body, peace for the mind, silence for the soul, and a renewal of our bonds of identity and love, the creative process eventually withers and dies. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 36, The Sabbath Sacking of Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is one of the most important, most influential, most dramatic moments in the history of the world. In 323 BCE, Alexander the Great lay dying at a young age in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar in Babel, with a vast empire, his own child yet unborn. In his final moments, his generals put forward the critical question: to whom should the territory he conquered be bequeathed? To this, Alexander supposedly replied, "To the strongest." This, as historians write, was taken as an open invitation for each general to prove his might against the other. And that, of course, is exactly what happened, as the conquered territories were divided among them. Originally, each would refer to themselves not as monarch, but as satrap, a sort of governor. But when the obvious heirs of Alexander were murdered, these men began to call themselves kings. And for the history of Jerusalem, the two most important of these men would be Ptolemy and Seleucus, who would go to war against the dynasty of the general to whom Jerusalem's territory had originally been allotted, Antigonus. Ptolemy would take Jerusalem on one Sabbath at the end of the 300s BCE, and the fact that it was a Sabbath for Jerusalem's Jews was central to Ptolemy's strategy of conquest. This episode is largely forgotten among Jews today, but it is a fascinating one, for it raises a question profoundly related to the coming clash between Athens and Jerusalem. To whom did the Greeks believe the world belonged? The answer could be found, perhaps, in Alexander's words that had started it all: to the strongest. The Sabbath, of course, was proclaimed by a faith with a very different worldview, and that is why a rediscovery of this moment is crucial for pondering the might, but also the ultimate finitude of Ptolemy's empire, as well as the essence of Jewish endurance. The general, and eventually king emperor Ptolemy, was one of the most important individuals in the development of Hellenism. And this because of the city he created in Egypt as his capital, Alexandria. Named for Alexander, whose body was ultimately interred there in a glass coffin as a site of reverence, the new capital of Egypt embodied Alexander's ultimate ambition, not only to conquer the world, but to bring the purported achievements of Hellenism to it. And the institution in Alexandria that expressed Ptolemy's own adoption of Alexander's goal was its academy, or museum, as well as its accompanying library. As the Egyptologist Toby Wilkinson tells us, quote, "The museum swiftly became a powerhouse of research and teaching as the Ptolemies sought out the best brains from across the Greek world and lured them to Alexandria with the promise of academic freedom and a guaranteed salary paid directly from the royal treasury. The museum buildings had all the necessary elements of a scholarly community: covered arcades with recesses and seats for quiet contemplation, a large dining hall in which the learned members could meet and discuss ideas, and of course, a library. Not just any library, but the greatest collection of books in the ancient world, acquired by fair means or foul from the best book markets of the day," end quote. Ptolemy's dedication to what he saw as enlightenment, however, did not seem to restrict the brutality of his wars, and as Josephus writes, the nickname by which Ptolemy was known, Soter or Savior, was absolutely untrue when it came to the unfortunate ravages of his forces in Ptolemy's attempt to conquer the area then known as Syria, in which Judea was to be found. But when it came to Jerusalem, more than brutality was called for. Arriving at its walls on the Sabbath, Ptolemy asked to be allowed in to bring an offering in the temple. Given that it was the Sabbath, none of the Jews were carrying weapons or in a state of military engagement. Thus, when allowed in the city, they were, as Josephus tells us, unable to effectively resist conquest. Josephus describes Ptolemy's actions as follows, quote, "He also seized upon Jerusalem, and for that end made use of deceit and treachery. For as he came into the city on a Sabbath day, as if he would offer sacrifice, he without any trouble gained the city, while the Jews did not oppose him. For they did not suspect him to be their enemy, and he gained it thus because they were free from suspicion of him, and because on that day they were at rest and quietness, and when he had gained it, he ruled over it in a cruel manner." End quote. Thus is the Jewish rest on the Sabbath used against Jerusalem's residents by the Hellenists. As we shall see when we study the Hanukkah story, it will not be the last time that Sabbath is wielded against the Jews. As we will further see, it will be declared and the rabbis will codify as a matter of Torah law that danger to life or matters of national security override the Sabbath. But the Sabbath sacking of Jerusalem led to the creation of one of the most important diaspora Jewish communities in the world. For once captured, Josephus further writes, Jews were offered full citizenship in Alexandria. Josephus tells us that, quote, when Ptolemy had taken a great many captives, both from the mountainous parts of Judea and from the places about Jerusalem and Samaria, and the places near Mount Gerizim, he led them all into Egypt and settled them there. And as he knew that the people of Jerusalem were most faithful in the observation of oaths and covenants, and this from the answer they made to Alexander when he sent an ambassage to them after he had beaten Darius in battle, so he distributed many of them into garrisons and at Alexandria gave them equal privileges of citizens with the Macedonians themselves. End quote. It was not in Jerusalem or Athens, but rather in Alexandria, that Jerusalem and Athens would first truly meet, and in some cases, merge, producing thinkers such as the famed Jewish philosopher Philo. The Talmud tells us of the flourishing community that grew there, and that the synagogue in Alexandria was one of the largest in the world. So large, in fact, that the assembled crowd was too vast and too far away from the one leading the service to actually hear him. Therefore, someone overseeing the service would wave a flag to signal to the crowd that the time had come to say amen, for many could not hear the blessing being recited. I actually remember thinking when I studied that Talmudic statement that this must mean that those assembled would not have been able to hear the rabbinic sermons delivered there. But this apparently did not seem to bother anyone. But a meeting between Jerusalem and Athens will also produce Jews who unfortunately believed that the latter represented true enlightenment and who would abandon the ways of the former. And one biblical law that truly clashed with the Greek ethos is the notion that every seventh day should be dedicated to rest and spiritual rejuvenation. Josephus further informs us of a Greek historian who cited Jerusalem's Sabbath sacking and the fact that the Jerusalemites were all at rest as a sign of what he, the Greek historian, thought to be the ridiculous nature of the institution itself. Josephus writes, Agatharchides of Cnidus, who wrote the Acts of Alexander's successors, reproaches us with superstition, as if we by it had lost our liberty. End quote. Of course, there is an amazing irony in this critique, because it will be in Alexandria, with its extraordinary academy of knowledge, that, as we will see tomorrow, the Bible will be translated into Greek, through which biblical ideas will spread. The concept of and the profound wisdom behind the Sabbath will ultimately be adopted throughout much of the world. To put it differently, Hellenism and Judaism met when on one Sabbath the Hellenists conquered Jerusalem, but in the end it would be the Sabbath that would conquer much of the known world. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks put it this way, reflecting on why creation would conclude in Genesis with the invention of a day of rest, quote, the Greeks could not understand the seventh day, Shabbat, as itself part of the work of creation. What is creative about resting? What do we achieve by not making, not working, not inventing? The idea seems to make no sense at all. Indeed, we have the independent testimony of the Greek writers of that period that one of the things they ridiculed in Judaism was Shabbat. One day in seven, Jews do not work, they said, because they are lazy. The idea that the day itself might have independent value was apparently beyond their comprehension. Oddly enough, Rabbi Sacks continues, within a very short period of time, the empire of Alexander the Great began to crumble, just as had the earlier city-state of Athens that gave rise to some of the greatest thinkers and writers in history. Civilizations, like individuals, can suffer from burnout. It's what happens when you don't have a day of rest written into your schedule. End quote. And Rabbi Sacks further adds that while many societies had long had years based on the cycles of the sun or the moon, nevertheless, quote, the idea of the seven-day week, which has no counterpart in nature, was born in the Torah and spread throughout the world via Christianity and Islam, both of which borrowed it from Judaism, marking the difference simply by having it on a different day. We have years because of the sun, months because of the moon, and weeks because of the Jews. And Rabbi Sacks concludes, the ancient Greeks could not understand how a day of rest could be part of creation. Yet it is so, for without rest for the body, peace for the mind, silence for the soul, and a renewal of our bonds of identity and love, the creative process eventually withers and dies. It suffers entropy, the principle that all systems lose energy over time. The Jewish people did not lose energy over time, and it remains as vital and creative as it ever was. The reason is Shabbat. humanity's greatest source of renewable energy, the day that gives us the strength to keep on creating. End quote. As we will see, Jews will in the future be prepared to fight on Shabbat when necessary. But we can also appreciate how this Sabbath sacking of Ptolemy also represents the larger debate between Judaism and Hellenism. It is all the more remarkable, then, that when Menachem Begin, as prime minister, declared that Israel's national airline would not fly on Shabbat, he was castigated by his opponents in the Knesset as outmoded and his decision as economically ill-considered. In response, Begin described how proud Jewish dedication to Shabbat throughout the centuries also impressed non-Jews. As described by Yehuda Avner, Menachem Begin said as follows, quote, "In Greece, there is a port city called Salonika, which had an extensive Jewish population before the war. Most of the port workers there were Jewish, and on Shabbat, they did not work. Those stevedores would forego their pay rather than desecrate the Shabbat. Non-Jews, Gentiles, accepted this as a fact of life, and the port was closed on the Sabbath day." Imagine that. And Begin in conclusion added that whatever one's own form of observance might be, one can still appreciate what the Sabbath gave to the Jewish people, saying, "This house should know it is not necessary to be an observant Jew to appreciate the full historic and sacred aura that enshrines this perfect gift called Shabbat. Its prohibitions are not arbitrary. They provide insulation against corrosive everydayness. They build fences against invasions by the profane, and they enrich the soul by creating a space for sacred time. In a word, one need not be pious to accept the cherished principle of Shabbat. One merely needs to be a proud Jew." End quote. We have, in other words, a striking irony. Begin's opponents were taking the original Greek position against the Shabbat, whereas Begin responded by explaining how the Jewish dedication to the Shabbat in Greece ended up impressing the Greeks. And of course, as Rabbi Sachs notes, the Shabbat also constantly renewed Jewish life itself. Ptolemy, who sought Alexander's empire based on his claim to be the strongest, would produce a dynasty that would rule Egypt, but not forever. With Cleopatra, it came to a close, and since then, Ptolemaean Egypt is no more. Today, Alexandria, with its academy and library, is no more. But Jewish Jerusalem exists. Its academies ring with the sounds of Torah study, and as the sun sets on Friday evening, a wave of joy rushes through the sacred city as Shabbat has come at last. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.